getting published. It is the number one goal of every aspiring author, writer, scribe that's out there who has a laptop or perhaps a journal that he or she is writing in daily. And for myself, since this is a creative slash writing styled podcast, I wanted to kick this thing off officially by talking about my own road to getting published. What was it like? What did it all entail? And ultimately, was it something that I look back on and go, man, I'm glad I did that? Because let's be honest, in today's society, it is so much easier to get your thoughts out into the world. So in this kickoff episode of The Writer's Lens, I dive deeper into my path to being published. Here we go. So today I'm going to be talking about self-publishing and traditional publishing and literally starting from the ground up. So how did this whole thing begin? How did I get into publishing? How did I, you know, how did I write my first book, and sharing a bit about what it took to actually write and get a book out there. So the truth of it is that if you were to Google search my name and you looked up JCL Falto, you would find the book title Epiphanies, Theories, and Downright Good Thoughts Made While Playing Video Games, published around January 2012. And that's a pretty hefty thing to say. Epiphanies, Theories, Downright Good Thoughts Made While Playing Video Games. So this was the title of my first book that I published that I had done. And honestly, the inspiration for this book came from a friend of mine whom I went to college with, and we were having a discussion over lunch one day. We were both out of college by this time, and we were both working in the healthcare insurance industry, and we were just kind of, you know, trading conversation, and he just kind of said, you know, dude, you should really write a book about, you know, video games or something that's, you know, very relevant to our generation, you know, because being elder millennials or so, video games, you know, we grew up with those. And since I had been looking for an excuse to write something, which this sounds so sad, I just said, sure, you know, maybe I'll take up that challenge on you, because I had been looking for some inspiration to do something, and this sounded like a great idea, and I could get behind it. And I honestly didn't have any clue how I was going to go about doing it, but I just felt like, you know what, this is going to be my first foray into publishing, so let's just get my feet wet. Let's just do something that's comedic. You know, I'm a pretty funny guy, or at least I think I'm funny. So let's write something satirical. You know, let's write something that is going to be somewhat funny for my readers. And maybe that's the best way for me to break in. It seemed like a lot of people that were breaking in their 20s as publisher or as being new writers were breaking in being funny and being humorous. And I figured that's, you know, hey, this is a good way to start. So that's what I did, and I started writing various essays that were epiphanies or theories or downright good thoughts about video games. So every chapter would have been an epiphany about video games, or, for instance, you know, one of my theories is the idea that video games are always being targeted towards, you know, young teenage boys. Case in point, go to any GameStop or video game distributor, and if you find a female heroine on the front page or on the cover, she's usually scantily clad and is wielding a battle axe and has a midriff showing. So there you go. There's one way to realize the where the target market is. So I wanted to be satirical, and for those that are unfamiliar with satire, a great example would be Jonathan Swift's essay, A Modest Proposal, which is literally an essay that talks about how the poor people of 18th century Ireland ought to sell their children to the high affluent elite class of the British so that they can eat them and therefore be a benefit to society. And granted, it's an outrageous proposal. It was meant to be. But it had this underlying truth and attitude about it, which was to expose the attitudes that people had towards the poor during that time period, and that was really what I wanted to go for. You know, me having a sort of a natural bent towards sarcasm, it felt very natural for me to do that. So I end up writing all these essays. You know, as I said, I end up writing a bunch of epiphanies and theories and thoughts about the video game industry. And I finish in about 6 months' time, so not too long, having a day job, being single, and, still trying to maintain a social life. That's what I was able to do. And once I was done, and I said to myself, wow, I've actually finished something. I've actually finished a book. And this could be a book. I mean, this actually could be a book. I went to the internet to figure out how to get it published. And turns out, as naive as I was at the time, there's two ways to get your book published, which is going to be sort of the bulk of this podcast. There's a traditional method, and there's a newer method, I should say, not the newest method, but self-publishing is the opposite of that. But what are they anyway? I mean, what's traditional publishing? What's self-publishing? Why should you care? Well, traditional publishing is you walk into Barnes & Noble, you walk up to the main stand in there, and you see a nice cover on a book, and it looks like so professionally done. Maybe it's in hardback, has a hard cover, and it's by somebody that has a semi-reputable name, or perhaps, it's someone you might have heard of before, like Stephen King or J.K. Rowling or whatever. This person more than likely is represented by an agency who represents them towards a publisher who then purchases the manuscript that they wrote, puts it in a nice book, prints a bunch of them, sends them out to retail stores, and away we go. Okay, that's what traditional publishing is. Self-publishing, however, is a bit newer and is a little bit of the opposite. You can actually get your book published by bypassing the agent. Okay, so we're bypassing the third-party person, jumping straight to a publisher, and having the publisher print your book for a price. So if you paid this publisher to print your book, they will print it for you. What a novel idea, right? I mean, we live in the age of, information sharing and blogging and social media outreach. I mean, what a great idea. Forget the middle guy. Let's just go straight to the publisher. So this was a really interesting thing to me, and I remember reading about it and going, wow, I don't have to wait 3 to 6 months to hear back from an agent to see if they actually like what I wrote, right? I don't have to deal with all the rejection letters that I've been getting for soliciting my book to them. I don't, I can actually go to somebody and they'll print it no matter what. Wow, like, what a great deal. So I did a little bit more research on self-publishing just to kind of get an idea as to, what I was getting myself into. And what I found was, even more to me, even more intriguing. In 2008, for instance, so not going back too far, I mean, this was 2011, 2012 when I was publishing this book, more books were self-published than were traditionally published in the American market for the first time ever. So in 2008, you had more self-published books than traditionally published books out there on the internet, ready to be published, first time that ever happened. Big deal. And if I jump ahead even further, now, granted, I didn't have this information at the time, but what I also found is that in 2014, an analysis done by Bowker, who does research on ISBN numbers for books, so which is the international standard. Every book has a barcode on it. I'm sure you've seen it if you walked into a bookstore. Every one of these has a book, has a barcode, and they basically track this year to year to year. They found out that in 2014, from 2013, the number of self-published titles had increased to more than 458,000, which was up 17% from 2012, and get this, up 437% over 2008. And 2008, again, was where the first time ever more self-published titles were done than traditionally published. So, holy cow, this is a budding concept. And again, me looking at this with the data I had about self-published titles becoming more popular, I thought, wow, this is a good time to jump on this. This is a great opportunity. More people were doing it rather than going the traditional route, so I might as well jump on it and see if I can do it too. However, the million-dollar question is it working? Was it actually favorable to go in that direction and be self-published? So again, I hit up the Google search button as most people do, and since I didn't have a group of editors living in the Midwest that I could just pull their ear aside and ask them. But I found some stories about some people who had found a lot of success publishing their books on Amazon in ebook format through their blogs, for instance. One such story is a paranormal writer by the name of Amanda Hawking, who had a full-time job, and she was writing books on the side and was sharing them in electronic format on Kindle, and ends up becoming this sensation by writing series after series after series of books for her audience. And it was really impressive. I mean, this is in 2011, where you end up finding out, I think the statistic was she ends up selling about 9,000 books a day, which is insane. I mean, even if you're selling them for $3, that's still really impressive. So reading stories like this really got me thinking, you know, hey, I could do this. You know, I could do this. And I think most people that hear about success stories, whenever you're watching TV or you're on the radio and you hear these things, you're like, man, you know, that could be me. You know, that could so be me. So I really decided, hey, you know, let's go do this thing. You know, let's make this happen. So I ended up reaching out to a self-publisher in Indiana, and they, you know, took my manuscript and analyzed it and said, hey, you know, whatever you want to do, you know, we'll publish it for you. You know, here's our rates that we want to publish it on your behalf. And I said, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to invest a ton of money in this because, again, I just kind of want to get my feet wet in publishing. So I'll take your most standard package, whatever that is. And the most standard package is we'll print your book, give us a cover, we'll put it together for you, we'll print it when someone buys it. That's it. All right. That's pretty much it. That's all we guarantee. And most self-publishers are like this. Okay. They'll give you a couple different package options. It's kind of like getting cable or Sling TV. You know, you have a couple different package options for, you know, more bang for your buck. So again, I was like, you know, I don't want to put too much into this. Maybe I can start doing the marketing myself. Just give me what's the most basic thing. So that's what I did, and I ended up having a buddy of mine actually do the cover, and I wrote up my own, you know, back cover, and I wrote up the little synopsis for it for them to put it online, and away we go. So what did I do next? Well, first of all, I realized I had to market myself, so I started making Facebook pages, I made Twitter pages, I set up a blog, you know, to start writing and sharing, you know, some of my chapters or something, because I read that's what you're supposed to do with self-publishing. So I'm doing all this stuff to essentially spread myself and create as many access points that an audience can find me that's out there, that's possible. Okay, that's possibly out there prior to, you know, my book actually getting released and being out there on the internet highways and byways. So I'm doing all this and taking a lot of time. And honestly, the Twitter page, I got to throw this out there. Maybe I'm old school, but man, I can't stand Twitter. I couldn't tweet or anything to save my life. So I just decided maybe I'd just stick to the blogging. But that's also neither here nor there. But I did all these things, and then came time to release the book. And I gave the sign off the book. I do remember, I should share this before we go any further. I remember sending in the final proof for this thing, and the book comes in the mail. They actually send you one of the nice things about this publisher was they sent the book in the mail to me so I could actually review it. And if I sign off on it, this was all free of charge, sign off of it and say, do you like it? Do you not like it? So I'm looking at it. I get in the mail one day, you know, I didn't cry or anything, but it was like, hey, you know, this was a lot of hard work. It was really nice to finally hold it in my hands and see that, hey, you know, I did this. I actually made this and my name was on it, JCL Felto. So I signed off on it. I gave them the go ahead. Then I started, you know, telling all my friends about it. Hey, you know, you'll find it on Barnes & Noble's website. You'll find it on, you know, Books A Million's website, this distributor's website, you know, check it out. And then I waited, which sounds like a pretty funny thing, but I waited. And I remember checking my sales rankings pretty religiously about every hour or two for about the first week or so, watching my sales rank steadily climb. And on various websites, I saw it going from, you know, 10,000 to 5,000 to 3,000 to 1,000 to being in, you know, in the top, I believe at one point I was in the top 700 on Barnes & Noble's website for sales of my first book. And all this, of course, is super exciting. And I'm really, you know, excited about it. But at the same time, I was feeling a little bit, I don't want to say lost is the right way to put it, but I was really feeling like I had no ability outside of telling friends, blogging once in a while, to keep the momentum. And that was the thing that I look back on and I go, if there was one thing that I really messed up, it was the launch itself. Anyone out there who's an entrepreneur who's listening, or anybody out there that's trying to start up a business, trying to start up something that they want to see have some legs to it, have some life to it, I just remember this very plainly. Telling your friends and your coworkers and a few choice people that you meet on the side of the road or anybody else like that is not a large enough population to really create some movement with whatever it is you're trying to do. And there's a whole host of reasons for this, and some of them I'll cover in later episodes, but to give you kind of the general overlay of this, I wasn't getting a lot of traction that I was hoping for. And looking back, obviously, my launch had a lot to do with it. You know, the months leading up to the book, a lot of people, there was some buzz about it. I blogged a couple times. I tweeted out some quotes that I did, but I really wasn't owning it. I wasn't owning this concept that I was moving forward with. I wasn't really owning the product of Epiphany's Theories and Downright Good Thoughts. And that is something that, as a writer, you just have to do. If you're going to get behind a book that you feel is worth reading, you really need to own it. You need to go for it. You can't just, okay, I've told a few people and that's going to be enough. Or I've written, you know, 10 blog posts and I'm going to share them and I'm going to try to get a couple other people to share them for me. Just it's not enough, okay? And I don't know what enough is, honestly. I don't know what that is, and I don't think a lot of people can even tell you that, because it's more of an organic process. It happens organically. There is an organic component to this. If you listen to enough podcasts and seminars on this, as I have, to know that there's an organic component to marketing your product. And I just really, I mean, I was totally naive to it. I thought I had a pretty good handle on how to tell people about what I was doing, but that was it. I mean, that was literally the end of it. So after the few weeks and months went by and I saw my sales start to drop pretty significantly, I started thinking a lot of things, and you know, probably the biggest one was, you know, I'm not good enough. You know, it sounds pathetic and demoralizing, but hey, you know, when you start to wonder, hey, is this absolute crap? You know, has what I've done just not good? Is it just a terrible idea? Was this satire that I wrote? Well, you know, what was the offensiveness? Did I offend somebody and no one's telling me about it? You know, whatever. And the second part of that then, that I started wondering after a while, was, you know, am I just doing something wrong with something good? You know, have I just not thought of enough ideas? Have I not considered enough alternatives in how to market myself? Because, you know, honestly, and this gets back to, you know, what I was saying about owning it, probably one of the greatest fears any creative person has is not so much the fear of rejection or even the fear of failure. It's really a fear of never being recognized. At least that's mine. I can say that. I find that as a writer, not getting a response out of someone who reads my material hurts worse than the person who tells me they'd like to wipe their butt with the pages of what I've written. Okay, not that anyone's ever said that to me, but I honestly believe that apathy is the biggest passion killer or you know, inspiration killer that there is. It kills momentum, it kills your drive. When there's absolutely all this effort behind something and someone turns and goes, eh, you know, or there's nothing there. I mean, at least if someone goes, wow, you need a lot of work here. At least they've invested the time to tell you what it is that you've done wrong. And even that's a scary thing. Again, being a writer, you know, putting yourself out there is a big deal, you know. And that was another thing that I was tackling with this first book, was the realization that things I had written that might have been very private thoughts at the time and I thought were really cool were now in the hands of friends and family and people across the world that I had no idea what they were going to think or feel after they got done reading it. But I went after it all the same. And that was the thing that I really had to just kind of deal with and manage going forward, was obviously, you know, like I said, the first big problem was the traction, but also this feeling of, you know, where's the reaction coming from? You know, where are the responses to what I've done? What is it that I'm not doing that I need to be doing? So I leaned a lot more towards the second part, which was maybe I'm just not doing enough with this product. Maybe I'm just not doing enough. So I did a little more research on some things that I should be doing, and I hearkened back to a lot of people that had success in self-publishing. And one of the things that was a mainstay was you got to have a series. You know, you got to have a series of books. You know, because you want people to keep coming back and reading your stuff. You want them to go, okay, that was cool. What else do you got? Because one offers are like, okay, whatever. You know, I'm not going to invest a ton of time because maybe they're not going to take me for the duration. So I decided that I was going to solve my traction issue by writing another book. Because I had a few essays, you know, kept over that weren't necessarily about video games, but I decided to morph those into another Epiphanies, Theories, and Downright Good Thoughts. And if you go out on the internet again, you can find this one. So this was my unofficial sequel to my first book, which was titled Epiphanies, Theories, and Downright Good Thoughts, Made While Being Single. And it was basically the Bachelor's Edition, because it was the unofficial sequel, or the official, sequel to the first one, because what's the byproduct of playing a lot of video games? I mean, you could be single. So that was my tie-in into the second book, was this book where I'd have epiphanies about being single, theories about being single, downright good thoughts about being single. Again, being semi-sarcastic, being satirical about it. And this time around, I stuck with the same publisher, you know, and I really worked feverishly to get the second one out, and I did. And in fact, I published, like I said, the first book was done in January of 2012. The second book ended up coming out in mid-2013, so about a year and a half later. But like I said, I had a little bit of material to work with anyway. So I worked, you know, really hard to get the second one going, get it out there. And again, try to create some buzz about my product, my platform. And this time around too, since I was making a bigger investment, I paid for a higher package with my self-publisher. I said, hey, you know, I want an I want a full editorial team this time. I don't want any spelling errors. I don't want people coming back to me saying, hey, man, you forgot a comma or a period here, which again did happen in a few of the first round of copies that went out. So just all kinds of snafus with the first book that went out for me. But I said, hey, you know, I need an editor this time. I definitely need an editor. So I went out and got an editor for my second book. And that was great. And that was great to go out and get somebody to help me figure out what was the do's and don'ts of writing a book. And again, it was a good experience. You know, another good experience for me to learn that it was going to take more than my own eyes and the eyes of a few, you know, friends or people that had read a few early copies of what I'd been doing to take a look at my work. And again, not just for writers out there, but for anybody, I think when you launch anything, you need to have a second set of eyes. Okay. So I did this, you know, I got myself an editorial team, and I went, you know, full guns a-blazing forward, writing my second book. Hey, this is going to be it. I'm going to have some traction now. And what actually happened after I released my second book in 2013 was even more crickets. There was probably less traction. There was more static that came after my second launch, which by now really made me go, okay, maybe I'm not doing... maybe I'm not creating a good product. Maybe I'm not doing something that is going to be able to support me financially. And That was really, I think, when I hit the brick wall, was a few months after the second release. I felt like creatively, financially, not financially so much, obviously, but more creatively and through my gusto to keep moving forward was just totally depleted. And I just remember feeling like I'm such a failure. You know, I've always wanted to write books and publish them, and this just felt like such a fruitless venture. You know, there wasn't anything to it. So without getting into that too much and ending this on too much of a bit of a sour note, I'm going to leave it at that and end this episode, since I did promise I would talk about my first writing venture, and I've actually talked about the first two because they're pretty much connected. But just a few, you know, pointers and parts of this, you know, conclusion here is that, you know, first ventures are always the hardest. You're going to make the most mistakes with them. I mean, that kind of goes as an obvious thing to say, but for me, it was a lot of hard lessons. I mean, it was a lot of hard lessons the first couple times around, learning the ins and outs of you know, what was it going to take to actually get the word out, and obviously own it. You know, owning the fact that I had this book out there. But it was a little bit deeper than that for me. It was more than just, you know, not really having what I considered to be a great product. I mean, I think the idea itself is still pretty good, but ultimately, was it me? You know, was this really something that I was passionate about? So in the next episode, what I'm going to be talking about is just passion in general. And what is it? What is it not? I think is probably the best way to start off, is to talk about passion. And in a society where we're constantly being hit with messages about pursue your passion, go after your dreams, you can do it. Is that even something you should do? You know, is that something you should be pursuing? Should you be pursuing passion? And how should you go about doing that? This was the next step in my journey in figuring out just what was I doing with this writing venture. And again, it'll be through you know, through that experience that I'll be sharing with you guys. So thanks for tuning in. If you guys actually want more info than just these podcasts, be sure to check out my website, jclfelto.com, and be sure to tune in again next week, where I'll be talking about passion on The Writer's Lens. So until then, this is JCL Felto. I'll catch you guys later.